the man behind the voice you've been hearing for decades associated with Valley sports teams. It's time for That's So Money with Arizona Diamondbacks and ASU broadcaster Jeff Munn. Money, money, money,
money. Yeah, yeah, I know. Where have you been, Munn? You keep saying you're going to update this podcast a little more frequently, and then it goes months without being updated. Well, okay, baseball's over for the year for the Arizona Diamondbacks. And so I have a little more time. How about that? So welcome to That's So Money. And there are a few things that I want to discuss in this podcast today. First of all, thanks for your patience. I'm sorry I haven't updated this recently, but the crunch of the baseball season does get to you after a while. Also, I hope you've had a chance to read something that I was very happy to write. Brad Sesmad asked me to write a few words about Neil Walk, and I couldn't limit it to a few words. And it was really it was great for me to be able to sit down and just express a few feelings about Neil. And it's if you haven't read it, it's available on this website, sports360az.com, and I invite you to check it out. And I will talk about Neil in a minute, but there have been a number of things that have been kind of rolling around in my head, and I want to get to them just kind of in no particular order. Yes, the baseball season is over for the D-backs, but I've said a number of times that we are about to embark on a fascinating offseason, I think, for the D-backs. When you consider the fact that there are a surplus of players at a couple of key spots, the infield, obviously there are a ton of really talented infielders on the 25-man roster, or the 40-man, actually. And then when you start looking down at the lower level of the minor leagues, you know Dansby Swanson's coming pretty soon. So there is a surplus there. There's a surplus in the outfield with more outfielders than there are spots. And with the decision by Peter O'Brien to give catching another try, and the front office is behind this 100% because they saw enough in O'Brien in the spring this last season to warrant a longer look at the catching position. Now all of a sudden, you're overloaded at catcher. Jared Salvatomaki has indicated he's going to go look for a two-year deal, maybe in a chance for more playing time in other places. And he should, based on the way he finished up his season. He should test the market and see what's available. But in the event that nothing does come to fruition for him, the D-backs have indicated they'd like to have him back. Now, all of a sudden, you've really got a logjam at catcher. You've got Salvatomaki, Castillo, Tuffy Gosewich returning from injury, and O'Brien. Now, all this means that Dave Stewart and his staff are going to be in a unique position to make a deal that actually may surprise you. There's a perception that you can't really trade to get a number one starter, a guy who can anchor a rotation. D-backs might be able to do it. There are a couple of teams out there, I don't want to give away names, that would fall into the category of teams that would be open to making a trade like that to get back a package of prospects. So it's going to be really fun to watch the D-backs in November and December at the GM meetings and the winter meetings, because there could be a lot of surprises coming from Dave Stewart and his staff as we look ahead toward next season. All right, on to other matters. Well, let me touch on this regarding baseball. A lot of you have expressed concerns, I know, for good reason, about the length of games, the pace of play. Baseball's been very concerned about it. And I just have to share a couple of thoughts about what I've seen over this past season. Number one, the commissioner's office has said that the pace of games or the time of games has been reduced by an average of 5 minutes this year. Now, admittedly, we haven't seen a lot of that with the D-backs because the D-backs have either been at the bottom in terms of length of games or near the bottom most of the season. Most of the games the D-backs have played have taken 3 hours. And it leads me to one conclusion. Number one, I'm not sure that baseball's, by the way, if you heard that noise in the background, it's my dog Stevie. Baseball implemented a system of fines for players who step out of the box, do things to just delay the game a little bit. I've heard this said by a number of people in sports. Fines don't have an impact on players. Suspensions do. The NBA has come up with a really
good way of dealing with the large number of technical fouls that occurred 5 or 6 years ago. If a player accumulates a certain amount of technicals, he serves an automatic one-game suspension. And I think maybe baseball should look at the same kind of system in regards to those who slow down the game. Instead of fining them, because again, fines in most cases are just a blip on the radar screen, how about suspending those guys after a certain number of violations? Because that not only sits them down, costs them a game's pay, but it also hurts the club because they have to play a man short. That was the thinking in the NBA. If you have a team that has a player that accumulates a whole bunch of technical fouls, chances are he's probably on the floor a lot and he's probably important to your team. Well, if he gets to a certain number of technicals and he has to sit a suspension, that's really going to hurt your team. To me, that's what I would do. Now, the other thing about baseball that has been a problem in terms of pace of play occurs in September with roster expansion. I would expect that we're going to hear something significant out of baseball, particularly at the GM meetings, about how to modify the rules for September roster expansion. And it's important to understand, first of all, why does baseball do this? Well, first of all, you know that there's a 40-man roster from which teams can pick 25 players to be on the active roster at the major league level. Now, once the minor league season ends around Labor Day, you still need the use of those 15 players on the 40-man that are not on the major league active roster. You certainly don't want to send them home just to sit around and wait for somebody to get hurt, and all of a sudden you get a call, come and join us. And especially in case of a pitcher, what are they going to do to stay in game-ready shape? So they figure the best way to alleviate that problem is to expand the rosters and let those players come and join the major league team after the minor league season is over. Okay, fair enough. But here's the downside to that system. Obviously, it slows the game down because more players usually means more pitchers, which leads to more pitching changes, especially in the middle of innings. Managers can afford to be more situational. I'm going to get a left-hander ready to get that left-handed batter out, and I've got a right-hander ready to get the next guy who hits right-handed. That slows a game down incredibly. So people around baseball, even managers, have said, we've got to figure out a different system. One of the other drawbacks to the roster expansion in September is not everybody gets to 40 players. Some teams call up 5 or 6 players, get to 31. Other teams call up 10 to 12 players, which increases their roster size to 37. And Chip Hale has told me on and off the air that there's something unfair about that. In terms of one team has more players than the other team, that can't be right. I have heard the suggestion that baseball should employ a taxi squad, where you have roster expansion, but for each game, you basically select 30 players that are available to use in that game. And that seems to be the most fair and equitable solution to what has been troubling baseball concerning September roster expansion. One funny story I can tell you about that subject. In 2007, the Rockies visited Chase Field for a series early in the month, right around roster expansion time, and Clint Hurdle was managing the Rockies at the time, and said, I'm not going to use these guys very much. I've told them, you know, enjoy your time up here. You're going to get major league meal money. You'll get to stay in nice hotels on the road. But in terms of playing in games, it's just not going to happen that much. And ironically, as it turned out, the guys that Clint Hurdle called up, or the Rockies called up, turned out to be vital contributors to the Rockies' push to the postseason that year. So Clint had to kind of back off his opinion about September roster expansion. But I think most everybody in baseball agrees that it's a little bit odd to play September much differently than you play the other 5 months of the year. Teams manage differently. There's more options available to managers. It's like playing the last 2 weeks of the NFL season with 80 players on your active roster instead of 50. Inevitably, you're going to play the game differently. So I think there's going to be something coming this winter, and it'll start at the GM meetings, and we'll see where it goes from there. All right, a couple of quick thoughts about football. I've been watching NFL games this year, and I've noticed something that I think bears some sort of mention in some form. You notice now that a lot of NFL teams really don't like being at the one-yard line when they're driving for a touchdown because it gives them less room to operate the passing game, that they almost would welcome a five-yard penalty so they could have a little breathing room. You know where that thought first came up? In arena football. More and more, I see the influence of the arena game in the NFL. It's not a bad thing. The NFL is much more dependent on the forward pass than it has ever been, and we all know that arena football is all about passing. Teams will take more risk, and that's a basic fundamental of the arena game offensively. What I'm getting at is this. Those of you who kind of thumb your nose at the arena game and say, well, that's not real football, you might want to take a moment to just stop and consider the fact that the NFL is utilizing more of the arena philosophy and concept every year. And if you want to know why Kurt Warner all of a sudden became the success he became in the NFL, a lot of it had to do with his experience in the Arena League, where the quarterback has to get rid of the ball quick. If you remember back to his days with the St. Louis Rams, Warner was a 1-2-3 and fire quarterback. Well, that was the arena game. So don't be so quick to criticize arena football, because the NFL has picked up a lot of concepts from it. In fact, the NFL traditionally has always taken little ideas from leagues that didn't quite make it. Obviously, they learned a lot from the American Football League, put names on the back of jerseys, other little rules innovations. They even took ideas and concepts about game presentation from the XFL. So when these leagues come along, you might look at it and say, well, that's not worthy of my attention. But just understand that even a league like the Arena Football League has lended some ideas to the NFL that the NFL has taken full advantage of. All right, now a couple thoughts about Neil Walk. And I said in the article that I wrote for this website that it might have surprised a few people to see the amount of emotion that was displayed at Neil's passing a few days ago. I have to tell you that in my time working at the Suns, I got to know Neil Walk, and it was a tremendous thrill for me because I was one of those kids that grew up in Phoenix when the Suns started, and Neil Walk was one of those rock star type names because he was just a member of the Phoenix Suns. His passing saddens me. I'm a man of faith, so I'm confident that Neil has been freed from his wheelchair and is now back to existing fully with doing all the things he wants to do in that special place that we all hope to be. But I'll tell you that it was fun and it was educational to spend time around Neil Walk. He was a very smart man. And I wrote in the article that he was Bill Walton before Bill Walton, not so much in the basketball sense, but just in terms of his view on life and his way of expressing that view on life. I don't think Neil would have been very good or very comfortable, I should say, as a television commentator because there are restrictions. You can't say certain things. And Neil was a guy that shot from the hip, so to speak. And it just fascinated me to spend time around him. He knew so much about the game. And people, I don't think, really ever gave him as much credit as he deserved for his knowledge of basketball. And certainly he lived in the shadow of Kareem Abdul-Jabbar, and that wasn't fair either. Because Neil Walk, if you took a Neil Walk today and put him in the NBA, there are a whole lot of teams that would be lining up to have that guy start for him. As I said in the article, if you just consider the fact that he was a guy that is a junior in college at a Big Five conference school like Florida, averaged 26 points and 20 rebounds, yeah, there'd be a lot of teams lining up to talk to him. But he always looked at himself as the booby prize because he was in the same draft as Kareem Abdul-Jabbar, and that really wasn't the case at all. Neil was just one of my favorite people. I'll miss him. I'll miss his take on life. I'll miss his outlook on basketball. But I am very much in a celebratory mode over the fact that I got to know him. One of the great thrills of working for the Suns was not just being in the arena or working the games themselves, but getting to know the people that I looked up to as a kid. Connie Hawkins, Dick Van Arsdale, Dick Snyder. The list could go on and on. Paul Westfall. Guys like that. And it was just so cool to be able to say that I got a chance to get to know him a little bit. And I don't often talk about that in these forums because it's tends to be look at me type of stuff. But I have to tell you that that was one of the really cool things about working for them. And it goes back to being a kid and growing up in Phoenix and being able to take in the arrival of a major league sports franchise and what it meant to the city. And that's why I've always said, too, in closing, and maybe on one of my future podcasts I'll talk more about this. Football, the Cardinals are very popular, obviously, and they're off to a terrific start. There's obviously a great deal of passion for baseball. The D-backs have never failed to draw 2 million fans a season. There's support for the Coyotes, and you saw it this summer when they were facing eviction from Gila River Arena. But I contend, and always will, that at the end of the day, Phoenix is a basketball town for one simple reason. The Suns got here first. We'll talk more about that in a future podcast. I do invite you to check out what's going on this website, because even since we visited last, there are so many new things going on with this website. It's terrific. And of course, Brad has added his football show, so there's just all kinds of things going on. You want to talk about a website in a growth mode? This website's in a growth mode. And what that means is more content for you. So I hope you'll check it out. And yes, we're in the off season, so you will hear from me more often in the months ahead. Thanks for being with me this time, and I'll talk to you soon.